following program, The Rooted Plain, America Serengeti, is a special presentation of Coyote Nation Press. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, commonly referred to as the ANWR, is located in the upper northeast corner of Alaska, inside the Arctic Circle. The refuge is the heart of a thriving Arctic ecosystem that hosts thousands of migratory birds, provides denning habitat for polar bears, and is the calving grounds for the 129,000-member Porcupine River caribou herd. Because of its wild and pristine nature, combined with an abundant array of wildlife found nowhere else on Earth, the Arctic Refuge has been referred to as the American Serengeti. In this half hour, we'll take a closer look at the issues surrounding the refuge and listen to the voices of those who are fighting to preserve our last wild place. In 1960, Republican President Dwight D. Eisenhower, recognizing the unique value of this ecosystem, set aside 8 million acres of Arctic wilderness, thus establishing the refuge and ensuring its protection from future development. But tragically, some 1.5 million acres located on the coast, referred to as the coastal plain, were left unprotected from exploitation. It is this critical but vulnerable area that is now threatened by the oil industry, with help from their pawns in Congress and the White House. The coastal plain is the seasonal home and summer calving grounds of the Porcupine River caribou herd. The Gwich'in Indians, who inhabit this sparse land, depend upon the annual migration of the caribou to maintain their traditional way of life and culture. Experts say that these caribou migration routes will be in jeopardy if oil exploration and development is allowed within the wildlife refuge. The Gwich'in people and porcupine caribou have coexisted here for 1,000 generations since the Ice Age, some 200 centuries ago. The loss of this place will also be a loss of a rich cultural legacy, and it will be lost for the worst possible reason, the unbridled greed of a few. There is a chance of saving this remarkable place. Before he leaves office, President Clinton can declare the refuge a national monument, protecting it from destructive speculative interests. President-elect George W. Bush has expressed his determination to open the refuge to drilling.
Sensing the imminent dangers to this remarkable place, conservation activist Margaret Murray wrote in the 1950s, "My prayer is that Alaska will not lose the heart-nourishing friendliness of her youth, that her people will always care for one another, her towns remain friendly and not completely ruled by the dollar, and that her great wild places will remain great and wild and free, where wolf and caribou, wolverine and grizzly bear, and all the Arctic blossoms may live on in the delicate balance which supported them long before impetuous man appeared in the north. This is the great gift Alaska can give to the world."
Relentlessly the Arctic Sea resounds upon the shore, and Mugo's court the waves report just as 10,000 years before. And coming through the caribou, renew the ancient round. And as they do, a chosen few return their bodies to the ground. And it is tragic, it is pure, to survive is to endure. And all is just as it should be. The coastal plain, the Arctic sea. And summers move on towards the call of distant lands, leaving only memories and cloven hoof prints in the sand. And the ocean glimmers gold tonight, bathed in Arctic light. Somewhere a tern takes rest from flight, somewhere a calf will die tonight. And it is tragic, it is pure, to survive is to endure. And all is just as it should be. The coastal plain, the Arctic sea. And all is just as it should be.
The Caribou Commons Project is a unique collaboration of northern artists, Aboriginal people, and conservation groups fighting to protect the refuge. Coyote Nation's Alaska Yukon correspondent, Fiona Stewart Campbell, interviewed Ken Madsen, one of the project's contributors, during his recent speaking tour on behalf of the refuge.
I spoke with Ken while he was here in Haines, Alaska, to present his traveling multimedia slide presentation show, Images, Sounds, and Music of Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. This beautiful and moving show featured incredible photography of wildlife and scenery from the coastal plain of Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and music composed by recording artist Matthew Lien and Wildlands. During the course of the presentation, Ken spoke at length about his 100-day, 1,000-mile journey by foot, kayak, and canoe from the Arctic Refuge to the Gwich'in village of Old Crow, Yukon. And he spoke movingly of personal encounters he himself had during that trek with the Gwich'in people, the caribou, and other members of the wildlife family.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your experiences on your trip? What were some of the moments that stand out in your mind and heart?
I remember one time toward the end of my trip where we were dragging our canoes up a river called the Rat River, and the last part of the trip was going to be paddling down the Porcupine River to the Gwich'in village of Old Crow in the Yukon Territory. And I met this 84-year-old woman living at a fish camp on her own. And the first thing she did was invite me to come in and have something to eat, because it was a cold, wet day and I was, you know, tired. And without asking any questions, she brought me in and fed me and looked after me. And here she was, 84 years old, living out on her own. And we got talking, and I told her why I was there, what my purpose was. And she started laughing really uproariously, and I couldn't figure out what was so funny. And then finally she said, "You're working for me. You're working for me. Now we like you. Now we like you," she said. She was going to feed me, whether or not she liked me. But there was this immediate, when I talked about the caribou, it was such a part of her growing up and her life, and still her subsistence needs and her family. You know, she wouldn't be able to survive without that. And so to meet me out there working to help protect it was just created this bond, and it was one of the moments on the trip that I really remember.
Fully 90% of the coastal plain in an area called the North Slope is already open for oil development, yet the oil industry wants to open up the last 10%. They claim that current reserves in the fields at Prudhoe Bay are running dry and will be unable to produce enough oil to keep the Trans-Alaska pipeline open. It's important to note that 85% of Alaska's state budget comes from oil royalties. In fact, Each Alaskan receives a check every year for more than $1,000 just for living in the state. Rumors of declining oil production make for effective propaganda by the oil industry. Conversely, asking Americans to consume less energy is slightly less appealing than giving away free money. Prudhoe Bay is the best-known example of the oil industry's plundering of the North Slope's fragile environment. Toxic pools and oil spills abound. The pipeline itself and the infrastructure which supports the oil industry workers illustrate the worst effects of modern extraction technology. By their own example, the oil industry has shown that there is no clean method of extracting oil from this pristine landscape. According to author Paul Hawken, over 90% of the storage pits in Prudhoe Bay violate EPA regulations for toxins, heavy metals, and carcinogenic contaminants. More than 23,000 oil spills have occurred since exploration began here. This is the same technology that would be used inside the refuge. 90% of Alaska's Arctic is already eligible for oil exploration. The Sierra Club says that oil operations in the Arctic annually emit over 43,000 tons of oxides of nitrogen, more than double emitted from Washington, D.C. There are hundreds of oil spills each year on the North Slope involving tens of thousands of gallons of crude oil and other petroleum products. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation lists over 60 contaminated sites associated with North Slope oil industry operations. Yet the oil industry continues to apply enormous political pressure to exploit this wilderness. During the height of the Gulf conflict, Republicans were thwarted when legislation they introduced to open up the refuge was defeated. A Bush presidency combined with a Republican Congress spells disaster for the refuge unless it is protected now. Some may argue that opening up the refuge would create jobs. But a study done by the Telus Institute in Boston in 1993 clearly illustrates how employing conservation techniques can create many times more jobs while saving energy. Our biggest reserves of oil are in conservation, and conservation doesn't kill caribou, endanger Aboriginal peoples, or threaten entire ecosystems with toxic contamination. Hawken also notes, the fact is that ceiling insulation and double-glazed windows can produce more oil than the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge at its most optimistic projections, at about 1/20th the cost, with 4 times the employment. Given the oil industry's record and the benefits of conservation, there is simply no valid reason for opening up the last of our wild and pristine places, for oil, for money, for anything. Once again, Fiona Stewart-Campbell with Ken Madsen.
The Arctic Coastal Plain of the Arctic Refuge is the most important onshore denning site for polar bears in the United States. Female polar bears have been known to abandon their maternity dens when seismic oil activity is going on, so they are also vulnerable. One thing that when we've been traveling around that many people can identify with are the migratory birds. It's just an incredible birthplace for migratory birds. They come from all over. They come from 4 different continents. They come from every state in the United States, and they travel to the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge to nest, and more than 100 species of birds go out to the coastal plain. And so people from wherever, doesn't matter where they are, if they're in New Jersey or Florida, some of the birds that they see passing through their state go to the special place to have their chicks every year. And so it's just an incredible birthing area. And then, of course, there's the life in the ocean, the bowhead whales, which is an endangered species, and belugas, and 3 species of seals, and musk oxen on the coastal plain, as well as Arctic foxes and wolves. And it's just a incredible, intact predator prey ecosystem, which is a very rare thing on Earth these days.
Yes, it is. And especially given the example of the migratory birds, it's important for people to realize that, who live in the lower 48, to realize that the Anwar is not an isolated place, but that in many respects, each of us is linked to America's Serengeti.
That's
the
right.
Birds being an example.
The actions that you take in your own home will affect this place way off in the Arctic, and vice versa. If we allow oil development there, it will affect our own homes and our backyards and what happens where we live. And that connection, I think, is a really strong thing. And once people make that connection, I think they can apply it to many other areas besides just the Arctic Refuge.
From Haines, Alaska, I'm Fiona Stewart Campbell.
The list of would-be despoilers of the Arctic Refuge is long. Let's round up the usual suspects. Suspect number one, President-elect George W. Bush. This ex-oil man has received nearly $2.7 million from the oil and gas industry for his presidential campaign. In comparison, Al Gore received $291,000, a little more than 10% of what Bush was given. Ralph Nader received a whopping $1,100, less than one-half of 1% of what Bush pulled in. Alaska's two pro-development senators, Frank Murkowski and Ted Stevens, received a combined total of about $1.5 million from the oil and gas industry in the last election cycle. Murkowski is chairman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee and an outspoken opponent of wilderness. He is a perennial sponsor of legislation to open the refuge for oil drilling. Stevens is chairman of the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee and has been working to open the refuge since 1980, and the list of perpetrators goes on and on.
Thank you.
Norma Cassie is a spokeswoman for the Gwich'in people. The following is an excerpt from the Caribou Commons Project CD.
This is the land of the Gwich'in. We have our language and a strong culture based on the land. This land that we live in is critical not only for our needs, it's also a critical habitat for dozens of animals and many migratory birds. One time, years and years ago, when I was about 10 years old, my grandpa and I were out walking around the shores of all these lakes in Old Crow Flats, and we stopped by this one to make fire and have some tea and bannock. And we're sitting there and we're eating, and it was really quiet, and we're watching some loons playing out there on the lake. And Grandpa told me, he said that sometime in the future, probably pretty close to the time you become a mom, there's going to be very few animals or birds out there on this lake swimming around. And when the loons, when you see just the loon out there, then that means that the earth, our environment here is in trouble. And now when I go back to the flats and I go back to that same spot, I see one loon, maybe two loons out there. And I often think about that and I remember that. Aboriginal people have been a part of this cycle of life in the north for tens of thousands of years. The Gwich'in are subsistence people. We don't need to consume more and more to fuel our culture. The Gwich'in people are caribou people. We call ourselves that, and that has come from way, way back because we have taken care of this herd for thousands and thousands of years. What is very sacred about our lands, too, we live near the calving grounds of the porcupine caribou. And during times of famine amongst our people, and they travel all those areas up there in the Arctic and share food with each other. But during times of famine, we never, ever go near the calving grounds. It is a very sacred area. Even the wolves and the bears protect the time of calving, and they don't go there as much either. And what is very well known right now all over the world is that we have many threats to the calving grounds of the porcupine caribou, this particular area that we hold so sacred. We have threats from oil and gas development. We also have threats of influx of people and too much air activity in those areas. The major one, of course, is the oil and gas development. Oil and gas, which they say, you know, is a 200-day supply for the United States. And if they were to open up the Arctic Refuge, it would be to me and to my people like going into a hospital nursery and tearing that apart. That's how we feel about it. We will do everything that we can and everything in our power to stop that because it means our life. Large tracts of land must be preserved in these areas to ensure the survival of our animals, not only in the Yukon, but our neighboring areas as well. Aboriginal people offer the world an alternative to a culture of consumption. If we ravage the land, we will follow a path that will destroy the wildlife in our ancient culture. A lot of stuff that I share with people is not my own stuff. It is stuff that I have learned along the way in my life and that are given to me by the old people. And one of the things that stand out in my mind so strongly now, in this time when we are having so much trouble with the way we treat our animals and the land around us, he said, listen for the howl of the spiritual brother, the wolf, for how it goes with him It goes with the natural world.
Finally, in the words of Robert Marshall, founder of the Wilderness Society, there is just one hope of repulsing the tyrannical ambition of civilization to conquer every niche on the whole earth. That hope is the organization of spirited people who will fight for the freedom of the wilderness.
Fruited Plain, America's Serengeti, was written by Fiona Stewart Campbell and Bill McLaughlin. Our program was produced by Bill McLaughlin at the studios of WNTI in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Original music was by Wildlands with Matthew Lien from the Caribou Commons Project CD and by Kate and Paul from their Earth Amber CD on Buy or Die Records. Our theme music was written and performed by Brian Carroll. To find out how you can help save the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, call the Alaska Wilderness League at 1-800-322-5205. Information on the Caribou Commons Project can be found at their website, cariboucommons.com. If you missed any portion of this program or would like to hear it again, an audio archive can be found at our website, coyotenation.org. This has been a production of Coyote Nation Press, which is solely responsible for its content. I'm June Benes. Thank you for listening.